is edition number 1984 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday, the 12th of September, 2025. Hello, you're listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 11th of September 2025. My name is Judith Elliott Hunter, and my fellow readers are
Marilyn Evans,
Claire Hill,
and Sue Hill.
At this board today, we would like to welcome two new listeners this week, Patricia Kennywell and Barry Battersby, both of North Walsham. We do hope you enjoy listening to The Mardler. This week, the sun will rise around 25 minutes past six and will set at about 20 minutes past seven.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes the sweet purr of the turtle dove, famous mustard, women's football and the love of newspapers.
But we will begin with the main news items, which include delays in the justice system, Norfolk's Victor Meldrew, Bacton Gas terminal strike, regional ambulance trust rating, but let's start with those lead stories.
The father of a 13-year-old boy killed in a road collision has spoken of his disappointment at delays in the justice system. Alfie Brown from North Walsham was cycling home along the street in Swayfield when he was struck by a Ford Ranger on August the 10th, 2023. He died at the scene as a result of his injuries. 2 years on, his family has now been told the trial of the man accused of causing his death will not begin until November 2026, more than 3 years after Alfie's death. At Norwich Crown Court on August the 29th, James Durham, 54, of Munsley, pleaded not guilty to causing death by dangerous driving. He was bailed to stand trial on November the 23rd next year. Judge Andrew Shaw acknowledged the Brown family's grief and blamed an ever-increasing backlog of work for the delay, but said he would treat the case as if it were a custody case for the purpose of securing an earlier trial date. But Alfie's father, Andrew Brown, said the family had been left devastated. He said, "It took the police and CPS nearly 2 years to get the case to court, and now we have to wait again. It's just so disappointing all round. Alfie's gone, and we're trying to get on with our lives, but we can't. We're left hanging, waiting. It's a feeling of helplessness." Mr. Brown said he can no longer face driving down the road where Alfie died and described the moment he found out the news. "He hadn't returned home, so I went out looking for him," he said. "When I reached Swayfield Bridge, the police had blocked the road. That's how I found out that my son had died, from a policeman on the side of the road." Mr. Brown added, "I just hope the next family in our position gets a better service than we have." He also apologised for calling out, "This is ridiculous," in court when the defendant's solicitor asked for the trial to be held in November 2027 to accommodate their preferred accident scene expert. He said, "When the judge asked whether that was a date we could do, I lost my temper a bit. He was talking another 2 years. I thought that was ridiculous, but I'm so embarrassed now." Alfie was remembered in a tribute by his mother, Rebecca Beauchamp, as a beautiful, cheeky boy who had an ability to make people laugh and feel comfortable.
A man who described himself as being Norfolk's Victor Meldrew was found dead at his home, a court has heard. An inquest has been opened into the death of 61-year-old Richard Keeble, who died earlier this year. Mr. Keeble of Bank Loke in North Walsham was found unresponsive at his home in June this year. The retired window cleaner was last year banned from shops in the town after becoming abusive towards staff, which he blamed on his hatred of queuing. Pleading guilty to breaching a community notice, Mr. Keeble described himself to magistrates as being a cross between Victor Meldrew and Alf Garnett. During a short hearing to open his inquest at Norfolk Coroner's Court, it was confirmed he had died on Friday, June the 27th. Area coroner Joanna Thompson said that the medical cause of his death had remained unascertained following a post-mortem examination. She adjourned the hearing until Monday, November the 24th, when a full inquest will be held.
Workers at Bacton Gas Terminal in North Norfolk are voting on possible strike action. The employees at the energy facility are being balloted on industrial action following a row over wages. At the centre of the dispute is Alltred's offer of a one-time 4% pay rise, which falls short of the two-year deal of 11.3% and 5.5% proposed under the National Agreement for the Engineering Construction Industry. A recent indicative ballot saw members vote 100% in favour of strike action, which would bring work at the site to a halt. Altred's staff at an adjacent site saw their pay increase following another recent GMB trade union dispute. Workers at the Bacton site, who do identical work, including scaffolding, painting and thermal insulation, are now seeking the same resolution. The ballot closes on Thursday, September the 18th. Paul Block, GMB regional organiser, said, "GMB representatives have worked hard to get Altred to listen to our members and resolve this dispute. So far, the company has been unwilling to provide any meaningful resolution. Staff on both sites work incredibly hard and they're just looking for fair pay for a fair day's work. They do identical work and they're employed by the same employer. There is simply no excuse to pay them differently," Mr. Block said. The terminal has played an important part in UK energy production for more than 50 years, supplying over a third of the country's natural gas. But recent years have seen plans to repurpose the site for carbon capture and hydrogen production, which would help with government ambitions to cut climate change-causing emissions. The terminal took about a year to build and was officially opened by the Duke of Edinburgh in 1969. At the time, homes and businesses were being converted to natural gas, a process that would take until 1977 to complete.
The region's ambulance trust has been named as the worst performing in the country. New league tables rating NHS trusts have been published this week, ranking organisations on a variety of metrics. Each trust has been given scores based on NHS targets, such as response times for ambulance trusts. The East Anglian Ambulance Service Trust, which serves the region, has been ranked rock bottom of the country's 10 trusts. Neil Maloney, Chief Executive of the East Anglian Service Trust, said, "This assessment reflects the ongoing challenges we face, particularly around Category 2 response times and tackling long-standing cultural issues within the Trust. But it also demonstrates our huge desire and ambition to improve. We're absolutely committed to serving our patients, and over the past year we have made real progress driving down response times across the region and improving patient care. I am committed to working with our colleagues, partners and patients to address our cultural issues openly and collaboratively and deliver safe, high-quality care for our patients." The highest ranked trust was the North West Ambulance Service, NHS Trust. It is the latest blow for the trust, which has regularly found itself struggling to meet demand and has been previously ordered to improve by inspectors. In March, the Care Quality Commission served the trust with a legal notice citing significant care concerns, with the care watchdog finding a litany of failings in the organisation. It came just after a year the trust was taken out of special measures by the regulator following a period of improvements. The league tables, which rank NHS trusts against one another depending on their sector, have been rolled out by Health Secretary Wes Streeting this week. They have also seen Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn named the worst performing hospital in the country.
Norfolk police are investigating after a boater says he fought off an attempted boarding with a fire extinguisher following a clash on the Broads. David Benbow, 40, was mooring up at Womack Water near Ludham last week when he got involved in an altercation with people on another vessel. He says his 24-foot Bayliner Buccaneer yacht was rammed by a man in a motor cruiser and he suffered a volley of verbal abuse during the incident at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, September the 3rd. He said he fought off the attack with the nearest non-violent thing by pushing the boater back to the other vessel with an out-of-date fire extinguisher. Mr. Benbow from Horning said, "No sooner had I tied up in Womack to shelter from the wind, he, the other boater, came round the corner. He said, 'Move your old boat, I want to come in there.' I said, 'No, mate, that's not happening.' Last year, a friend of mine had the same thing happen to him in the same place with the same man. He rammed me and lunged out of his chair through the side canopy opening as if he was about to jump out and attack me. I grabbed the nearest non-violent thing next to me, which was an out-of-date fire extinguisher. I had to push him back and then he left." A spokeswoman for Norfolk Police said, "We have received a report of assault occurring on September the 3rd at 7:30 p.m. when a man approached another man on his boat and verbally assaulted him. The suspect proceeded to hit his boat into the victim's boat. No one was injured and our inquiries are ongoing. Womack Water flows into the River Thurne between Potter Heigham and Thurne Mouth."
Police have launched an investigation after the Green Party's new deputy leader said he had been racially abused during a visit to Norfolk. Mothin Ali revealed the incident, which happened in August, after he was voted into the role last week. Mr. Ali said he had been visiting Cromer with his family when a group confronted him. He said the individuals threw beer bottles and shouted, "Get out of our country," while one individual also pulled his trousers down. A spokeswoman for Norfolk Police said police received a report on September the 5th, 2025, that a man and his family had been racially abused on Cromer Beach on August the 28th, 2025. An investigation is now underway. Sheffield-born Mr. Ali, a Leeds city councillor, has said the incident was a result of right-wingers ramping up anti-migrant rhetoric. Richard Leeds, the mayor of Cromer, has apologised to Mr. Ali on behalf of the town, adding he was disgusted when he read about what had happened. Stephen Aquarone, Liberal Democrat MP for North Norfolk, has described those involved as scumbags. "Throwing bottles are the actions of scumbags and are not a reflection of North Norfolk or its residents. I want to make it clear that any abuse, racial or otherwise, will be dealt with to the full extent of the law."
CCTV cameras are being installed at a Broads beauty spot 1 month after a young man died there. Ezra Tilford Key, 23, lost his life after an incident at Horsted Mill on August the 5th, when he got into trouble in the river. Horsted, with Stanning Hall Parish Council, which co-owns the mill with the Environment Agency, has now put up safety warnings as well as the support for the cameras. Council Chairman Matt Stevenson told the BBC that although the cause of Mr. Tilford Key's death remains unclear, the council had observed worrying actions such as tombstoning into the mill pond. "We hope in the future having this extra set of eyes will help us understand the usage of the mill and, if we need to, change behaviours," he said. The cameras will not be monitored live, but instead used to review incidents or provide evidence if required. Additional safety signs, including new warnings from HM Coast Guard, have also been put up to highlight the dangers of jumping into the water. The death marked the second Broads fatality of the summer. Nishay Patel, 14, died after getting into difficulties in Beccles in July.
So social media misinformation from America has been blamed for a new low in vaccination rates for children in the region. New figures have shown that 1 in 10 children in Norfolk are not up to date with various immunisations by the time they turn 5. The alarming statistics show a new low for the 4-in-1 booster, which provides protection from polio, whooping cough, tetanus and diphtheria, with the rate now at 88.8%. The rate for the MRI vaccine, measles, mumps and rubella, sit fractionally over 90%, meaning 1 in 10 children are not up to date. The slump has prompted public health bosses to renew pleas for parents to bring their children forward for their jabs, while experts believe the social media noise can be held to blame. Speaking at a meeting of Norfolk County Council's Cabinet, Member for Public Health, Fran Wymark said, "Not here in Norfolk, but we have had outbreaks of measles due to the low levels of vaccinations. Vaccinations do save lives. You may have seen it to the contrary on social media, particularly in America, perhaps, but they do save lives. They are probably the biggest invention of man to save lives." Professor Paul Hunter, an expert in infectious diseases from the UEA's Norwich Medical School, attributed the downturn to a combination of social media noise and complacency. He said, "When something like a vaccine works, nobody notices. That can lead to complacency, people believing they don't need to be vaccinated against something because they don't hear about cases of it. But you don't hear about cases because the vaccinations are working." Misinformation and anti-vax rhetoric on social media has certainly also had a big impact. Dr. Francis Swords, Executive Medical Director for the NHS Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Board, said, "Vaccinations are one of the most important, effective ways we have to protect children against a wide range of serious illnesses like measles, meningitis and whooping cough. The more people vaccinated, the more effective the whole population is protected from those infections taking hold and spreading. It is important that vaccines are given on time for the best protection, but if your child has missed one, please contact your GP team to see if they can catch up."
Our next few news stories include fundraising evening, Norfolk Broads recognition, best train provider, Second World War veteran.
Two cancer survivors are hosting a fundraising evening for local charities on Saturday, October the 11th. John Platten and Gary Powell will present an evening of stories and poetry reflecting their experiences of cancer survival, aiming to support others affected by the disease while raising money for Cromer Cancer Support Centre and the Healing Harbour. The event will take place at Sheringham Community Centre at 7pm. It will include stories, poems and cake. Both Mr. Powell and Mr. Platten will have signed copies of their books for sale, with 10% of the proceeds going to Cromer Cancer Support Centre via the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital charity. All money from ticket sales will be distributed between the two charities. Tickets cost £5 and can be bought from Mr. Powell on 07738 426017 or from The Kitchen at 17 Station Road, Sheringham. The NNL Hospital charity raises money to support patients, families and staff at Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, Jenny Lind Children's Hospital and Cromer Hospital. The Healing Harbour provides palliative care for people in North Norfolk.
The Norfolk Broads have been recognised as the UK's top location for an autumn getaway. Often referred to as Britain's answer to Venice, the Broads were given top honours. Travel booking site Omeo created a list of the best UK countryside locations using weather data. The Broads claimed top spot, beating the likes of the New Forest in Hampshire and the Cotswolds. It receives an average of 9.3 days of rain during the autumn months, with average temperature highs of 14.2 degrees centigrade, making it a relatively dry staycation spot. Horning and Wroxham received an honourable mention for offering a mix of tranquil countryside and charming waterside villages. The booking site described it as the perfect place for those who enjoy the blissful sounds of nature, cosy village pubs, and breathtaking seasonal scenery. An autumn escape to the Norfolk Broads might be just the retreat you need pre-Christmas, they added.
Greater Anglia has been named the best train provider in the country. A new study analysed data from the Office of Rail and Road between August 2024 and August 2025. It evaluated each operator's punctuality, percentage of cancelled trains, and average passenger delays to create a performance score out of 100. Greater Anglia was crowned as the most reliable operator in the country, with 84% of its trains arriving on time. It also boasts a performance satisfaction score of 97%. Travellers only face an average delay of under 1.5 minutes on its services. C2C Railway Limited, which runs services in East London and South Essex, was ranked as the second most reliable operator in the study by Bet Clever. More than 96% of customers are satisfied when they travel with the provider, and 79% of its trains arrive at the station on time. According to last year's data, the least punctual provider is Avanti West Coast, which offers services from London to the West Midlands, North West England, North Wales and Scotland.
A Second World War veteran has been given a fitting send-off following his death, aged 101. Sergeant Reginald Curtis served as an RAF gunner in a Lancaster bomber flying out of Kirmington and Scampton air bases in Lincolnshire. He was medically discharged from the RAF after he was diagnosed with mastoiditis, an infection of the bone behind the ear. He then joined the Navy, serving on convoy protection duties in the Mediterranean. He would later recall being just off the coast of Gibraltar when the first atomic bomb went off. After the war, Reg, from Munsley near Cromer, settled into a civilian life and got a job working as an engineer. Soon after, he met the love of his life and future wife, Liz. The couple travelled around Europe together on a motorcycle before returning to England. Following his retirement, Reg and Liz returned to Norfolk, where they built their home together. Liz died in 2023, but before his death, Reg was a keen supporter of the Battle of Britain events at County Hall, Norwich. He was also a supporter of the 93rd Bomb Group Museum. His funeral took place at Cromer Crematorium on Holt Road in Cromer on Friday, September the 5th. In attendance were members from the Royal British Legion, Holt Branch, the Royal Naval Association and the Royal Air Force Association, all of whom paraded their standards in his honour. To read all obituaries and tributes, join the Facebook group Norfolk's Loved and Lost.
RNLI lifeguard patrols have ended for the season on most beaches in the region. Patrols finished on 11 of the 16 RNLI lifeguarded beaches in Norfolk and Suffolk on Sunday, September the 7th, with just 5 sites remaining under supervision until Sunday, September the 14th. The 5 beaches with extended cover are Sheringham West, Cromer East, Munsley, Sea Pauling and Galston. Ted Morgan, RNLI Regional Lifeguard Lead, said, "Sunday marks the end of our peak lifeguard season for 2025. I'd like to say a huge thank you to our lifeguards for their hard work over the season, keeping people safe while they enjoy our coast. Our teams have shown immense dedication and skill, responding to numerous incidents and giving care to those who found themselves in difficulty. Throughout the season, the whole team have shown competence, professionalism and the ability to rise to every challenge."
One of Britain's biggest fashion houses chose a Norfolk estate as the set for its winter 2025 campaign. Burberry brought famous faces such as Hollywood star Rupert Everett and The Crown actor Luther Ford to Walterton Hall near Aylsham for a photo shoot to showcase the new range. The designer has said the pieces were largely inspired by the faded charm and eccentric characters of the English country house, and there is no doubt that Waterton fits this description. The estate was commissioned by Horatio Walpole, the younger brother of Britain's first Prime Minister, Sir Robert Walpole. It underwent an award-winning restoration by Peter Shepherd and Keith Day in 2016, and in 2023 it was bought by the Ellis family. The Burberry shoot honours this, centring around the concept of a group of friends enjoying a rainy weekend in the English countryside.
Our region's folklore is taking centre stage on a new tour. Law Folk, a one-woman show celebrating the folklore of Norfolk and Suffolk, will visit Sheringham Little Theatre on October the 15th at 7:30 p.m. The performance explores traditional tales collected from the region, featuring legends such as the ghostly Black Shuck, stories of a local mermaid and lesser-known characters like the mischievous Hibbly Bibs. Katie Ann Whiting, writer and performer of the show, said, "We collected folklore stories from the people at the Norwich Book Fair last year and were inundated, so we realised we were onto something and wanted to share them. There were some real quirky ones, including a man who made up a story he used to tell his daughter about the Sheringham Hibbly Bibs, who were fishermen that worked for a dinner rather than money, and who he turned into little trolls that got up to mischief. We had a little boy who really believed that some people lived under the water and had webbed toes and an extra finger, because that's what he'd been told by his family." The company plans to expand the collection by gathering more stories during the tour and inviting submissions through its website at thewhitingsonthewall.com. The show uses shadow work and an original soundtrack to bring the tales to life, all performed verbatim as they were told. For tickets and further information, visit sheringhamlittletheatre.com or call 01263 822 347.
A musical journey through the world of theatre is coming to life on stage. Choir Worsted will perform its autumn concert at Worsted Village Hall on Saturday, October the 18th at 7:30 p.m. and at Aylsham Church on Sunday, October the 19th at 3 p.m. The concert will include songs from Les Miserables, Miss Saigon, My Fair Lady, Phantom of the Opera, West Side Story and Brigadoon. Adrian Connell, Choir Worsted's musical director, said, "We are delighted to be back in Worsted for this concert, following our last appearance in the village church as part of Worsted Festival. This time we are in the village hall, where the bar will be open. We are also really pleased to be performing in Aylsham Church, which is a first for Choir Worsted and is a lovely, welcoming venue. Mr Connell, who lives in Sheringham, has been with the choir for nearly 2 years. He is a former music teacher at Broadland High School in Hobbiton and a former musical director for the Norfolk Youth Music Theatre. Choir Worsted is open to all and meets at Dillon Village Hall on Thursdays from 7:30 to 9:30. The group performs a wide range of music and is already preparing for its Christmas concert in December." Mr Connell said, "There are so many benefits to singing, as well as having the chance to make new friends. We would welcome any new members coming along and give us a try. The first session is free. Tickets are £10 in advance or £12 on the door. To book for Worsted, email linda.serrett@btinternet.com or call 01692 581815. Aylsham tickets are available from J.P. Possel or via the choir's QR code. Programmes will be available to buy on the door. You are listening to edition number 1984 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday, the 12th of September, 2025. Still to come, there are items about RNLI lifeguards, a choir, and of course the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all of that, this week's obituaries.
Hood, passed away peacefully on August the 19th, 2025, aged 84. Beloved husband of Faye, dear father of Andy and Carol, stepfather to Caroline and Lisa and all of their families. His funeral is at Cromer Crematorium on Wednesday, October the 8th at 2 p.m. Family flowers only, please, but donations welcome for Motor Neurone Disease Association. Cheques payable to MND Association can be sent care of Blythe & Sons, 4 Creamer Street, Sheringham, NR26 8DZ, or given online at www.northnorfolkfuneralservices.co.uk.
Paul Crowe Mains, 17th of April 1951 to the 6th of September 2025. Loving husband to Carol and wonderful father to Nicola, Michelle, Ben and James, deceased. Adorable granddad to Hugo, Freddie, William, Reuben, Esme, Jaden, Grace, Ruby, Willow and Fern.
And now a local event. At Bingham Priory, Ruddymore is going to be produced on the 17th to the 20th of September. Set amongst the ruins, this promises to be an evening to remember, with a comedy operetta that explores love, hope and what to do when you inherit a curse. Cambridge University Gilbert and Sullivan Society production at Bingham Priory, Warnham Road, Bingham, near Fakenham. Tickets are available at 01328 830796.
We turn to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where the turtle dove is a dwindling sand of summer. Famous Mustard's reputation is slipping away. Women's football and love of newspapers.
For many country folk, the gentle rolling purr of the turtle dove is evocative of the splendour of high summer. But this once familiar sound of the sunlit country lanes of rural Norfolk is disappearing. In much of the countryside, this migratory bird has been replaced by the slightly larger and resident collared dove, whose call to my mind is less pleasing, a nasal sounding ha-ha with the cadence of a blacksmith's hammer. The collared dove's spectacular rise in number is in stark contrast to the turtle dove's sad decline. Although its disappearance has little to do with its plainer white-grey coloured cousin and more to do with human activities. Despite this, you may still be lucky enough to see turtle doves this summer. Once common around every village in the southern half of England, Norfolk has become one of the last surviving heartlands for the turtle dove, particularly in the county's Claylands area. However, centuries of hunting across continental Europe has led it into secretive habits and is quick to take flight upon approach. It is a small, slim dove with a thin neck and protruding round head. Its wings are neatly patterned with light orange, brown and black, and they have a blue-grey panel that is visible in flight. The head and breast is a soft, subtle pink, with adults bearing black bars upon their necks. Its rather odd name has no link to actual turtles, or that its plumage has a vague reference to the reptile. More likely, it is a corruption of the French name tourtel. The turtle dove feeds almost exclusively on weed seeds, and although associated with arable farmland, it prefers varied and mixed habitats. One of the reasons for the reduced breeding success is that everywhere is just too tidy. Lanes have their verges cut before flowers can take to seed. Elsewhere, herbicides are freely used on unsightly weeds, and hedgerows are cut down each autumn, preventing them becoming tall and unkempt, which turtle doves prefer. Being quite shy, quiet corners of our countryside are hard for it to find too. Despite this, all is not lost, as several studies have identified the bird's requirements, prompting conservation organisations such as Norfolk Wildlife Trust to work with farmers, landowners and other stakeholders to improve its favoured habitats. And the turtle dove is a species that will benefit directly from the work that NWT's Meadows Appeal will help to fund. The well-known NEP Estate Rewilding Project saw one singing male in 1999 increase to 18 in 2020 and proved that with proper consideration, the turtle dove can be saved as a UK breeding bird. Similar projects in North Norfolk have seen the return of breeding turtle doves. However, as with many aspects of conservation, it takes an international effort to achieve lasting success. The migration of the turtle dove takes it on a perilous journey to sub-Saharan Africa and back. If the birds escape the mist nets along the coast of the Mediterranean, they are then met by the hazard of tens of thousands of guns. In Malta, the slaughter claims 100,000 birds, with 800,000 shot legally each spring in Spain. In addition, illegal glue traps take countless numbers across France and Italy. A recent but short-lived EU moratorium on turtle dove hunting saw an immediate increase in breeding success. The turtle dove, a migratory bird of summer, would have been an unlikely gift at Christmas, although the species has become an integral part of the culture of England's summer folklore. Pairing for life and often found close together, they have been used as a metaphor for marital love, with Shakespeare using the turtle dove as a reference for memory. Its gentle purring call brings to my mind a peaceful countryside of picket fence cottage gardens, meadows, overgrown orchards and hawthorn-lined lanes. I'm sure, like me, the sweet purr of the turtle dove has triggered memories of childhood summers in the minds of country folk across the centuries.
As readers of my last column will be aware, I have been on a long research tour exploring the gastronomy of France. When you write about food and drink, these are the kinds of things that you have to do, purely, of course, for the benefit of your readers. You can thank me later. Last week, I found myself in the city of Dijon, once known as the powerhouse of the Dukes of Burgundy, who at one time ruled over a domain bigger than that of the King of France. As a result, Dijon is a grand city full of amazing architecture and history. It's also one of the most important food hubs in France, which is in itself saying something. So it was inevitable that I should make my way to the incredible Allées, the indoor market, which offers an absolute cornucopia of food and drink to the demanding consumers of this region. As I have done throughout my trip when shopping for food, I brought with me my trusty Coleman's cool bag, which I was given many years ago when I was contracted to write some copy for that august company. The bag is bright yellow and emblazoned with the iconic Coleman's logo, which once upon a time was an important part of the Norfolk and Norwich landscape, but which has sadly rather disappeared from our lives. I shouldn't have been surprised that this logo would be of such interest to the foodies of Dijon. The city is the undisputed mustard capital of France, and while Norwich once vied for the honour, the French city now holds the world title as well. Many of the traders at Dijon's market ask the same question: what happened to Coleman's mustard? Some of them knew the connection with Norwich. It's probably fair to say that Coleman's was one of the only Norfolk food and drink brands which ever cut through on the world stage. I had to admit sadly that my home city has let this claim to worldwide fame slip through its fingers. While there are some valiant efforts being made to resurrect our county's reputation in the mustard stakes, with firms like Condimentum seeking to boost the profile of the county's mustard growers, Monty's producing proper Norfolk mustard, these names are not yet finding widespread recognition in the way that Coleman's once did. That is a real shame, because Norfolk mustard is, in one important way, much more authentic than the more widely known Dijon product. This is because the raw ingredients, the mustard seeds themselves, are grown in the county. The majority of the seeds used in Dijon mustard come from Canada, although there is a movement to grow more locally. So how did we get to the situation where once again the Norfolk authenticity and food producing expertise has not translated into widespread recognition outside the county? As I have mentioned many times in these pages, it is because we as a county have failed to create and build a compelling brand for the county's food and drink. Yes, we had Coleman's, but as circumstances have shown, when push comes to shove, a commercially owned brand has little or no loyalty to a particular geography. Corporate profits always come first. It has been interesting to visit strong Dijon mustard brands such as Feio, which are well known in France, but which recognise the value in subjugating their own brand recognition in favour of the bigger picture, in this case, the value of the Dijon mustard name. Because we in Norfolk have never bothered to develop a local food brand, it is unsurprising that when Coleman's abandoned the county, our reputation in the mustard stakes went with it. In other countries, this kind of regional brand building is undertaken by public bodies because there is a recognition that it is a sound investment which will result in employment, economic prosperity, and therefore more money for public services. Is it too much to hope for that with our current political reset, this kind of long-term thinking might take hold?
With the recent England women's team success, the game has reached new heights of popularity. But is there enough availability for young girls to play football in Norfolk? Winning the Euros highlighted the growth of the sport, with stadiums full and pubs crowded with eager spectators. And the Lionesses' recent victory parade in London was attended by more than 50,000, a huge increase from the 7,000 that attended following their Wembley win 3 years ago. But while this shows an enormous growth over the years, is this being replicated in Norfolk? As a female footballer who began playing at the age of 14, I feel like I have experienced many positives and negatives within the game, especially growing up in Norfolk. I began playing when a friend told me I should give it a go, so I went with her to a training session and never looked back. However, I was confused why the closest club to me that had a women's team was 30 minutes away. 6 years later, this is still the case. A team for boys can be found around every corner. However, this wasn't the same for me as a woman. Why could the boys in my school year play for Sheringham, yet I could not? And why could the boys play football in PE, yet the girls could not? I played for Aylsham for 3 years before joining my current team at North Walsham, the women's team well known for producing the current England player Lauren Hemp. I spoke to some teammates to see what they thought on the availability of girls' football in Norfolk. Willow Locke, the captain of North Walsham football team, said, "I tried to join a boys' team when I was in junior school, but they didn't allow me to play games as I was a girl. So it's not always been great. I think it's a lot better now, but still not perfect." Jessica Parrish, 22, who also plays for North Walsham, after recently moving to Norfolk from Lincolnshire, said, "I personally think there is a good coverage of football in Norfolk. More than Lincolnshire, I'd say. Since living here, I think there are bigger teams and there's a team in most towns. Even if it's a five-a-side or a seven-a-side, but it does help if you know someone who plays, though. I can imagine it's quite difficult to get into if you don't know anyone who plays. The number of women's teams in Norfolk has undeniably grown, an example being Holt Ladies Team, which was formed last year. The Norfolk Women and Girls Football League also now contains three leagues for 11-a-side, two for 7-a-side, and leagues for each age range under 18. Although the change is slow, I believe that women's football is becoming the phenomenon it should be, and the change is beginning to spread to remote areas like Norfolk. Although the clubs are a little further from home than I would like, the support and friends I've made on the team are worth that 30-minute drive. A special thanks to Mum and Dad for driving me to training for all those years." Lauren Hemp's return to North Walsham also marked an emotional moment for me as I witnessed the marketplace crowded with thousands of supporters for Hemp. To meet the inspiration who really shone a light on women's football in Norfolk was amazing, and men, women and children all rushed to queue to meet her. I think this really highlighted to me the massive change we are seeing happen as Norfolk came together to celebrate our Norfolk Lioness. One young girl held a sign that read, "Impossible is an option. You made it possible. I want to be just like you, a lioness from Norfolk." For young girls to have such an incredible role model is amazing. And I believe it is a massive factor for the change occurring.
I never thought I'd see a day when I would find that Jeremy Clarkson and I would have something in common. Yet the day has dawned. It turns out that we both love the sound that the newspapers make as they drop onto the doormat each morning, and then we both spend the first hours of each day wading through the pages, charging our batteries with information and opinions, plus witty commentary on current events at home and abroad. And there I was thinking that he was only a slab-faced petrol head who spent his time careering round with the like-minded pals, rough riding the toughest roads they could find, bruising and battering various cars until the poor beasts begged for mercy. It wasn't only the toughest, roughest roads they went for. There were bewildered locals along the way, wondering what these maniacs were up to. I seem to remember a sticky encounter somewhere down south which resulted in Jeremy and his team needing an armed escort to leave the country. Wasn't it something to do with a number plate whose combinations of letters and numerals would cause offence to certain elements of the population? Hotheads who were baying for Clarkson's gang's blood. I suppose I could claim to be a kindred spirit of the petrol heads, not in the sense of being a clutch burner or an accelerator fiend. I am the daintiest of drivers, never exceeding the limit or tailgating, law-abiding motorists, even if they are a little slower than I would prefer. Patience would be my middle name. My claim to be a kindred spirit stems from having an aunt who drove racing cars at Brooklands in the 1930s. She was my mother's sister, Dorothy, and the cars she drove were Marandaz Specials, designed and built by Donald Marandaz, a hard-nosed old fascist who marched shoulder to shoulder with Oswald Mosley and then found himself interned on the outbreak of war. The cars he built were pretty good, resembling smaller versions of the Bentley of the time. In fact, the resemblance was so close that the Bentley people got their lawyers to warn off Marandaz. But it didn't stop him from building more cars. It was one of those that my aunt, Dorothy Summers, won the race at Brooklands in 1936. I suppose she could have been labelled a petrol head. She certainly mixed as an equal with the pre-war racing fraternity. But though she was a speed queen, she didn't have the gift of loquacity in her later years. I attempted to interview her, but it was a dull result. If there had been any poetry in her which might have arisen from her experience behind the wheel, there was none to show. Which brings me back to the common interest of Jeremy Clarkson and me, our love for the printed word and our eagerness to keep the presses rolling. It is really an awful revelation that so few people now get their names from the papers, choosing instead to click online for a pre-digested summary of what might pass for the news, a summary that's the work of an algorithm that's polluted with fake news. If readers believe that, they'll believe anything. We were lucky to have well-established newspapers that are the work of editors and journalists who seek to present the truth. And if they deviate from it, they have to answer to one of the regulators in place to guard the medium. The same goes for the broadcasters on the radio and the television. But this online stuff sidesteps regulation. These internet sources don't trouble to separate truth from lies. All they exist for is to hook subscribers and keep them hooked to please the demands of the advertisers. Jeremy and I are fortunate. There are fine editors, feature writers and reporters who daily protect us from the mischief mongers. You are welcome to join us.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles include a former parish councillor on trial and bird scarer row.
A former parish councillor has admitted using a secret spy camera to film a boy in the shower for his own sexual gratification. Voyeur Matthew Cooper from Munsley Road in Trimmingham, North Norfolk, admitted a string of sexual offences when he appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court. Prosecutor Sarah Fiddy told the court, police discovered the secret spy camera after they received reports from Google and Kik, a mobile messaging app, that Cooper had been suspected of uploading indecent images of children to the internet. The 61-year-old, who was supported in court by his wife Jeanette, pleaded guilty to 10 charges of different sexual offences. He admitted 3 charges of sharing indecent images of children on Kik Messenger, 4 Category A images, 2 Category B images and 6 Category C images on March 23, 2023. Cooper also admitted another charge of possessing an image of a child, 3 charges of making indecent images of a child, 60 Category A images, 80 Category B images and 336 Category C images of children, all on April 12, 2023. One of the charges of voyeurism Cooper admitted occurred between March 1, 2023 and April 11, 2023, while the other charge of voyeurism dates to April 21, 2008. The force seized 21 electronic and recording devices from his home. Magistrates told the former Trimmingham Parish Councillor that he had 3 days to hand himself in at the police station so he can be added to the sex offenders register. They also told Cooper to speak with probation so a pre-sentence report can be prepared ahead of his next hearing at Norwich Crown Court on October the 6th. A former parish councillor, Cooper is a former Trimmingham Parish Councillor who once chaired a fundraising committee to raise money for a new village hall. He and his wife used to run clubs in the village for both young and elderly people. Mrs. Cooper was suspended from her role on the management committee of the Trimmingham Village Hall Trust when the group learned of her husband's charges.
Campers at an idyllic glamping site say they have been disturbed by bird scarers going off from 5 a.m. amid an ongoing row between a gamekeeper and the site owner. Nigel Marsh, who runs the destination in Edgefield as part of his holiday company, My Mini Break, has said customers are leaving bad reviews due to the devices going off. He says they have been placed close to his venue at Dam Hill Plantation since last year and have continued to disturb his guests for another summer. He attempted to report the noise by complaining to North Norfolk District Council, NNDC, but the authority was unable to take action due to the site not being a permanent residence. The gas guns, which can reach up to 130 decibels, stopped being let off at the end of August. Reviews complained about the bird scarers beginning at 5 a.m. and lasting until 11:30 p.m. One said it seemed they were right by our heads. Another said they gave a lower score because of monotonous explosion noises from a local farm, which spoiled their experience. Another said the constant, very loud and close noise kept waking their baby and caused their dog's anxiety. Some campers have been forced to leave the site early due to the disturbance from the bird scarers. Mr. Marsh said he kept a record of the noise and submitted it to the Environmental Health Department at NNDC. However, NNDC said it was a civil matter and not something officers could respond to, as the campsite is not a permanent residence. A spokesman said, under the Environmental Protection Act 1990, North Norfolk District Council has a statutory duty to investigate noise complaints where the complainant resides at the affected premises as their main place of residence. If the property is not a permanent residence, nor the permanent residence of the complainant, it would be a civil matter. He said, North Norfolk's industry relies on tourism. Rob Chambers, the gamekeeper who operates at the neighbouring Edgefield Hall Farm, said the bird scarers were there to scare birds away from crops. He added that Mr. Marsh should be more worried about other negative reviews about his campsite, which include comments about the cleanliness of showers and toilets. The pair have been locked in a dispute since last year due to the bird scarers. Mr. Marsh is due to appear at Norwich Crown Court in January 2026, accused of stealing the gas guns, which are valued between £700 and £800. He has pleaded not guilty to the theft. Since taking over the lease in 2023, he has invested thousands of pounds to turn it into a glamping and camping site. He said, North Norfolk's industry relies on tourism, but I've been left on my own. But North Norfolk District Council has not taken kindly to his actions, and he is currently in a dispute with the authority over the sighting of three shepherd's huts on site, resulting in an attempt to take enforcement action against him. This is currently the focus of an appeal to the Planning Inspectorate, the government official that presides over planning disputes.
A Norfolk village's traditional bonfire night celebrations have become the latest event to be scrapped because of onerous impositions created by a new anti-terror law. The fireworks display in Blakeney will not go ahead this November, with organisers blaming increasingly complex health and safety measures required by so-called Martin's Law. The legislation is named after Martin Hett, one of the 22 people killed in the Manchester Arena bombing attack in May 2017. It places extra requirements for organisers of events of more than 800 people to take steps to protect against the threat of terrorism, like bag search policies and CCTV. Since its introduction, critics have warned that the well-intentioned law may have a stifling effect on community organised events. They fear it will place such unrealistic demands on organisers that many may simply scrap their plans. The Free Blakeney event, held on the quayside, usually attracts hundreds of visitors to the village. It is organised by the parish council, and a provisional date for this year's display had already been set, with a fireworks provider lined up. However, the decision to cancel it was ratified at a meeting this week, with councillors also raising concerns about the clerk's workload and difficulties finding enough volunteers. Minutes from a previous meeting, where the cancellation was first proposed, state the decision reflects the growing complexity and compliance demands of delivering the event, including anticipated requirements under Martin's Law, staffing limitations, finding volunteers to fulfil a number of roles, and the clerk's increasing workload and study commitments. While a provisional date had been advertised and a fireworks provider penciled in, no financial commitments or contracts had been entered into. The Terrorism Protection of Premises Act 2025, as Martin's Law is officially known, received royal assent in April and comes into force over the next 2 years. It was drafted after a campaign by Fegan Murray, whose son Martin was killed in the attack on an Ariana Grande concert. It requires organisers to have a person responsible for ensuring appropriate public protection measures are in place to reduce the vulnerability of the event to an attack of terrorism and the risk of physical harm to people present if an attack occurred. Ultimately, regardless of how likely your venue is to be targeted, it is better to be prepared and not to need to be than not to be prepared and need it, as the saying goes. The organisation said preparations including training, information sharing and drafting a preparedness plan, including locking doors to delay attackers. The overarching aim will be to ensure spaces are better prepared to respond quickly to evolving situations, have awareness of processes they should follow, be able to make rapid decisions and carry out actions that will save lives, the statement said. On its website, Norfolk County Council advises, although terrorist attacks are rare, the threat from terrorism is real and increasingly unpredictable, with public spaces and crowded areas being increasingly viewed as attractive targets. Martin's Law will ensure that security preparedness is delivered consistently across the UK, ensuring better protection of the public. The new duty will require venues to take steps to improve public safety, with measures dependent on the size of the venue and the activity taking place. Blakeney Parish Council said it would now consider asking the community if it would take on organising the event in future.
Locals take town's upkeep into their own hands. A group of locals are taking matters into their own hands to spruce up a market town they say has been neglected. The Big Reefham Cleanup, a newly formed volunteer group, hopes to make the Norfolk town look inviting through a series of litter picks, weeding and various other public space restorations. The organisation has been set up by Ryan Glover, who lives in the town. He said, "I'd like to see Reefham looked after. And to be honest, some areas look neglected. I know the council can do something about it, but it will take weeks, if not months, to sort it out. I'm trying to put together a team of volunteers to help just give it a clean-up and make Reefham look inviting." There are a host of areas the group is looking at, working on. Corston Road, the Marketplace, Stimson's Piece are among the areas of the town being targeted. Mr Glover added, "There's weeds and grass growing through the gaps on the curbs and pavement. Some plants are overgrowing on the street, and there's a wall near the spa that will fall if the plants are allowed to continue to grow. The Cleanups Facebook group has already amassed nearly 100 members, with the first effort penciled in for September the 20th. You can see more about their efforts on their page. Reefham Town Council has been approached for comment."
A day of activities and family fun is being planned to mark 200 years of life-saving. The RNLI will host events in Norwich and Haysborough Lifeboat Station during Heritage Open Days this month. It will be offering a chance to explore its work and history as part of its 200th anniversary celebrations. Rebecca White, Community Manager at the RNLI, said, "We're really excited to be opening our doors for Heritage Open Days this September, and to be celebrating more than 200 years of the RNLI. These free events are a fantastic chance for people to step behind the scenes, meet the crew and experience the incredible history and spirit of life-saving at Haysborough and Norwich. As a charity, we rely entirely on donations to keep our lifeboats launching, so while all events are free to attend, every donation on the day will help us continue saving lives at sea. Visitors will be able to explore the crew room and kit room and enjoy a special station presentation, along with the opportunity to meet the volunteers who save lives at sea.
A chart-topping band has released a new music video that was filmed in several Norfolk locations. The Last Dinner Party has dropped the latest track from their forthcoming album, From the Pyre, available to order from October the 17th. The Scythe was filmed on location in Norfolk with shots in Thetford, Holt, Weybourne and North Walsham among the scenes that made the final cut. The video follows an elderly man and woman who drive a beat-up Nissan V6 from 1986 around the Norfolk countryside and stop at various locations along the way. North Norfolk District Council posted some behind-the-scenes shots to social media, saying, "North Norfolk District Council and Norfolk Screen were pleased to support The Last Dinner Party's music video for their single The Scythe, which was shot on beautiful 35mm film around North Norfolk, including The Feathers in Holt, The Three Cottages Fish Restaurant in North Walsham and Weybourne Beach." In a message at the end of the video's credits, a special mention is also given to Barry Walker and Jess and Jade Hawkins at the Barry Walker and Sons petrol station in Thetford. They are the latest band to join the growing list of stars filming their music videos in Norfolk. Ellie Goulding's hit, The Writer, released in 2010, shows the singer climbing the steps to the top of Haysborough Lighthouse. Jake Shears, former lead singer of the Scissor Sisters, filmed the video for his song Too Much Music in Norfolk, including scenes shot at October Studios at Scotto Enterprise Park and arcade scenes at Britannia Pier in Great Yarmouth.
A trip to the Norfolk seaside is costing people more than just the price of chips and a Mr. Whippy, with beachgoers reporting shock additions to their phone bills. Poor mobile coverage along the county's coast is causing handsets to latch onto signals from passing ships rather than UK masts. This tricks the networks into thinking the phones are out at sea and automatically switches them to maritime mode, connecting them to satellites via the ships. At this point, customers are hit with roaming charges which apply to calls, texts, and data. Charges vary depending on the network, but calls can cost around £5 per minute, while data can run at £10 per megabyte, meaning a few minutes of web browsing or video streaming could cost tens of pounds. Locals and holidaymakers have been reporting such issues over the summer, while visiting several beaches, including Sheringham and Munsley, as well as Clye Harbour. Retiree Mike Costello says the issue seems to be particularly acute in Munsley, where he lives. "A lot of people probably don't even notice it happens as it swaps across and swaps back again," he said. "Unless you're vigilant about checking your bills, you don't notice. The phone signals around here are a bigger issue. If we had better coverage on land, it wouldn't be searching for signals at sea in the first place." Communities worst affected include seaside ones such as Haysborough and Eccles-on-Sea. Campaigners warn that weak or absent signals leave vulnerable residents feeling unsafe as they cannot call for help in an emergency. How to avoid roaming charges. Turn off roaming in your phone settings or mobile account. Apply a bill cap, as low as no pounds, to stop unexpected out-of-plan charges. Switch to airplane mode or use Wi-Fi only when near the coast. Contact your provider if you have been billed. Most will refund.
Home refused. Plans to turn a town centre shop into a home have been withdrawn after objections. Hugh Middleton applied to convert the property on Shire Hall Plain in Holt into a one-bedroom house, saying the business had ceased trading. But Holt Town Council objected, saying, "Councillors are keen to see the unit remain as retail," whilst there was some acknowledgement that a small residential dwelling located in town would be of benefit to a local family. There is no guarantee that this property would be purchased by a local family. It is likely this would be an attractive holiday let or second home. North Norfolk's District Council's business development officer also objected, saying the scheme would result in the loss of a well-positioned commercial unit. They said the property had been in consistent commercial use since 2005, adding, "This long-standing usage demonstrates the viability of the premises for continued commercial activity." They added Mr. Middleton should enter an economic statement including evidence the property has been marketed for all commercial use and all reasonable efforts to retain its commercial function have been exhausted.
Our last few articles cover revolutionary way to buy flooring, miniature Quran, passion for plants and marriage proposal.
Norfolk's very own Mattress Man has launched a revolutionary new way to buy flooring. Cozy Carpets, which Andrew Kerry co-founded, has introduced its new mobile flooring showroom services across Norfolk and Suffolk. Mr. Kerry, who is best known for founding Mattress Man, has promised to make shopping easier by bringing the showroom to customers' doors. "Everyone knows me for Mattress Man, but everyone who knows me knows that I have worked in carpets and flooring longer than I have mattresses," he said. "When I opened a brick-and-mortar flooring showroom in 2001, there was no reason to challenge the standard. But times are changing. People want to shop, browse and buy on their terms from the comfort of their homes. Our mission is to redefine the way people shop for carpets, making it more convenient than ever by bringing our showroom to your door." Mattress Man, Mr. Kerry's other retail business, was founded in 2004 with one store in North Walsham. It has now expanded across the country and is the UK's biggest online mattress specialist.
A tiny Quran, once kept in a Norfolk doll's house, is set to go under the hammer. Expected to fetch between £2,000 and £3,000, the 18th or 19th century book will be sold at Hanson's Auctioneer's Routon Sale Room on September the 27th. The 300-page miniature Quran spent more than a century in the same family, passed down from ancestors who travelled widely in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The unnamed vendor said, "My great uncles and grandfather travelled the world a great deal in the late 19th and early 20th century. They were connoisseurs of fine and rare items and often brought presents home for my grandmother and her sister. The miniature Quran was given to me for my doll's house when I was very young. Measuring just 1.5 inches tall, the book, which was originally a sansak, a talisman carried by Ottoman soldiers and travellers for protection. Mark Nelson Griffiths of Hanson's Auctioneers said the size of the text was a key factor in the book's perceived power.
A 20-year-old with a passion for growing plants has opened a new garden centre in North Norfolk. Josh Douglas, who is from Hevingham, has been passionate about plants and gardening since the age of 10 and is hoping to make a big difference at the site of the former Groveland Garden Centre in Routon. The Garden Centre closed in 2023 and Mr. Douglas has now moved his business, JD Plant Nursery, onto the premises in Thorpe Market Road after he was given a chance to take on the lease. "I did a Royal Horticultural Society course in Cambridge a couple of years ago and then worked in another plant nursery before this opportunity came up," he said. I couldn't say no. We found out about this opportunity in May and we were unsure at first. We luckily managed to pool the money together and went from there. The business has been open for nearly 3 weeks and Mr. Douglas said the early signs are very promising. It's only been a few short weeks, but things look to be very promising for us, he said. We've had a lot of positive feedback about the business so far, and we hope that'll continue in the weeks to come. The aim for us is to just get the word out there that this garden centre is back, and we want to be recognised as one of the go-to centres in Norfolk. Mr. Douglas, who has supplied plants to the Memorial Garden at Aylsham High School, said his love of plants and horticulture got him through the long nights. To get the business started, it took a lot of long nights and a lot of work went into it, but it has been very worthwhile, he added. I've always loved growing plants. It's always been a passion of mine.
A couple who named their son Forrest after a holiday park near Cromer are now getting married after a recent return trip. Campers Marcus Clark and Jessica Crofts, both 22 and from Derbyshire, were in the Foresters restaurant and bar at Forest Park in Northreps nearly 2 years ago when an emergency occurred. Jessica, who was pregnant, felt her waters break, even though her baby wasn't due for another 10 weeks. Marcus, who was holidaying with his parents, Alan and Joanne, said, "We went out to Foresters, we sat down, ordered some tea, and then the next minute my partner told me her waters had broken. The manager at Foresters couldn't have done enough for me. People all stood around me to give me some privacy, and I got an ambulance ride to hospital." Jessica added, "I got seen really quickly and had an emergency C-section, and then the baby was here." The couple decided to name their son Elijah Forrest and recently returned for another camping trip at the site. It was on this trip that Marcus decided to get down on one knee and propose to Jessica. "We went again to Forrester's for something to eat and I asked my partner to stand up and I asked her to marry me and she said yes." Will Woodrow, sales manager at Forest Park, presented a bottle of champagne and a congratulations card to the couple as a gesture from the CEO, Simon Gurney. He said, "We are delighted that our restaurant and the park have played such an integral role in the changing the lives of Marcus and Jessica, and we wish them well and their families all the very best for the future."
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please, remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Preston. Editing and producing this issue was Manny Gomes. Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But now, it's cheerio!